Violet. 142 days to go. 2 a.m. Wednesday. My bedroom. I wake up to the sound of rocks at my window. At first, I think I'm dreaming, but then I hear it again. I get up and peek through the blinds, and Theodore Finch is standing in my front yard, dressed in pajama bottoms and a dark hoodie. I open the window and lean out. Go away! I'm still mad at him for getting me detention, first of my life. And I'm mad at Ryan for thinking we're going out again. And whose fault is that? I've been acting like a tease, kissing him on his dimple, kissing him at the drive-in. I'm mad at everyone, mostly myself. Go away, I say again.
Please don't make me climb this tree, because I'll probably fall and break my neck, and we have too much to do for me to be hospitalized.
We don't have anything else to do. We've already done it. But I smooth my hair and roll on some lip gloss and pull on a bathrobe. If I don't go down, who knows what might happen. By the time I get outside, Finch is sitting on the front porch, leaning back against the railing.
I thought you'd never come, he says.
I sit down beside him, and the step is cold through my layers. Why are you here?
Were you awake?
No.
Sorry, but now that you are, let's go.
I'm not going anywhere. He stands and starts walking to the car. He turns and says too loudly,
Come on.
I can't just take off when I want to.
You're not still mad, are you?
Actually, yes. But look at me. I'm not even dressed.
Fine. Leave the ugly bathrobe. Get some shoes and a jacket. Do not take time to change anything else. Write a note to your parents so they won't worry if they wake up and find you gone. I'll give you 3 minutes before I come up after you.
We drive toward Bartlett's downtown. The blocks are bricked off into what we call the boardwalk. Ever since the new mall opened, there's been no reason to come here except for the bakery, which has the best cupcakes for miles. The businesses here are hangers-on, relics from about 20 years ago. A sad and very old department store, a shoe store that smells like mothballs, a toy store, a candy shop, an ice cream parlor. Finch parks the Saturn and says,
We're here.
All the storefronts are dark, of course, and there is no one out. It's easy to pretend that Finch and I are the only two people in the world. He says,
I do my best thinking at night when everyone else is sleeping. No interruptions, no noise. I like the feeling of being awake when no one else is.
I wonder if he sleeps at all. I catch sight of us in the window of the bakery, and we look like two homeless kids. Where are we going?
You'll see.
The air is crisp and clean and quiet. In the distance, the Purina Tower, our tallest building, is lit up, and beyond it, the bell tower of the high school. Outside bookmarks, Finch pulls out a set of keys and unlocks the door.
My mother works here when she's not selling houses.
The bookstore is narrow and dark, a wall of magazines on one side, shelves of books, a table and chairs, an empty counter where coffee and sweet things are sold during working hours. He stoops behind the counter now and opens a refrigerator that's hidden behind it. He digs around until he comes up with two sodas and two muffins, and then we move over to the kids' area, which has bean bags and a worn blue rug. He lights a candle he found near the register, and the light flickers across his face as he carries it from shelf to shelf and trails his fingers along the spines of the books. Are you looking for something?
Yes.
Finally, he sinks down beside me, and runs his hands through his hair, making it go off in all directions.
They didn't have it at the bookmobile park, and they don't have it here.
He picks up a stack of children's books and hands me a couple.
They do, thank goodness, have these.
He sits cross-legged, wild hair bent over one of the books, and immediately it's as if he's gone away and is somewhere else. I say, I'm still mad at you about getting me detention. I expect some fast reply, something flirty and flip, but instead he doesn't look up, just reaches for my hand and keeps reading. I can feel the apology in his fingers, and this takes the wind out of me, so I lean into him, just a little, and read over his shoulder. His hand is warm, and I don't want to stop holding it. We eat one-handed and read our way through the stack. And then we start reading aloud from Dr. Seuss, Oh, the Places You'll Go. We alternate stanzas. First Finch, then me. Finch, then me. At some point, Finch gets to his feet and starts acting it out. He doesn't need the book because he knows the words by heart. And I forget to read because it's more fun watching him, even when the words and his voice turn serious as he recites lines about dark places and useless places and waiting places where people don't do anything but wait. Then his voice turns light again, and he is singing the words. He pulls me to my feet. The two of us are doing our own version of flip-flapping, which is a kind of leaping over things. The beanbags, the rug, the other books. We sing the last lines together and end in a heap on the floor, candlelight dancing across us, laughing like we've lost our minds. The only way up the Purina Tower is the steel ladder built into the side, and there seem to be about 25,000 steps. At the top we stand, wheezing like Mr. Black, beside the Christmas tree, which sits planted all year. Up close, it's larger than it looks from the ground. Past it, there's a wedge of open space, and Finch spreads out the blanket, and then we huddle on top of it, arm to arm, pulling the rest of the cover around us. He says,
Look.
On all sides of us, spread out below, are little white lights and black pockets of trees, stars in the sky, stars on the ground. It's hard to tell where the sky ends and the earth begins. I hate to admit it, but it's beautiful. I feel the need to say something grand and poetic, but the only thing I come up with is, it's lovely.
Lovely is a lovely word that should be used more often.
He reaches down to cover my foot, which has found its way out of the blanket.
It's like it's ours,
he says. And at first I think he means the word, but then I know he means the town. And then I think, yes, that's it. Theodore Finch always knows what to say better than I do. He should be the writer, not me. I feel jealous, just for a second, of his brain. And this moment, mine feels so ordinary.
The problem with people is they forget that most of the time it's the small things that count. Everyone's so busy waiting in the waiting place. If we stopped to remember that there's such a thing as a Purina Tower and a view like this, we'd all be happier.
For some reason, I say, I like writing, but I like a lot of things. Maybe out of those things, I'm best at writing. Maybe it's what I like best of all. Maybe it's where I've always felt most at home. Or maybe the writing part of me is over. Maybe there's something else I'm supposed to do instead. I don't know.
There's a built-in ending to everything in the world, right? I mean, 100-watt light bulb is designed to last 750 hours. The sun will die in about 5 billion years. We all have a shelf life. Most cats can live to be 15, maybe longer. Most dogs make it to 12. The average American is designed to last 28,000 days after birth, which means there's a specific year, day, and time to the minute when our lives will end. Your sisters happen to be 18. But if a human was to avoid all life-threatening diseases and infections and accidents, he or she should live to be 115.
So you're saying I may have reached my built-in ending to writing?
I'm saying you have time to decide.
He hands me our official wandering notebook and a pen.
For now, why not write things down where no one will see it? Write it on a piece of paper and stick it on the wall. Of course, for all I know, you may suck at it.
He laughs as he dodges away from me, and then he pulls out an offering. The bookmarks napkins, the half-burned candle, a matchbook, and a lopsided macrame bookmark. We lock them into a flat Tupperware container he's confiscated from his house and leave it sitting out in plain view for the next person who comes here. Then he's up and standing at the edge, where only a knee-high metal guardrail keeps him from falling to the ground. He throws his arms out over his head, fists clenched, and shouts,
"Open your eyes and look at me! I'm right bloody here!"
He shouts all the things he hates and wants to change until his voice is hoarse. Then he nods over at me.
"Your turn."
I join him at the edge, but he's farther out than I am, as if he doesn't care whether he falls off. I take hold of his shirt without him noticing, as if that will save him. And instead of looking down, I look out and up. I think of all the things I want to shout. I hate this town. I hate winter. Why did you die? This last thought is directed at Eleanor. Why did you leave me? Why did you do this to me? But instead I stand there holding on to Finch's shirt, and he looks down at me and shakes his head, and in a moment he starts singing Dr. Seuss again. This time I join him, and our voices drift together across the sleeping town. When he drives me home, I want him to kiss me goodnight, but he doesn't. Instead he strolls backward to the street, hands shoved in pockets, eyes on me.
"Actually, Ultraviolet, I'm pretty sure you don't suck at writing."
He says it loud enough for the entire neighborhood to hear.